Our next panel is in the classroom, and I'm delighted to introduce our first speaker, Charles Ackland. Charles.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone. It's great to be here. I want to start by thanking David Shepherd for showing us the true inspiration of most of David Cronenberg's films. I had no idea that Erpy was indeed the original source of much of his imagination. I'm going to talk today about films, about educational film. Now, I mean, to start, it's always struck me as a little bit odd that there are quite a few 16-millimeter films telling you how to operate a 16-millimeter projector. I mean, if you're watching the film, have you not already figured out what you need to know or had somebody do it for you? But there was an abundance of these films. Many of these circulated quite widely. And many of which covered a range of presumptions about screen education, and some of these I'm going to address here. What I'm going to focus on, though, are the films about film usage, as opposed to those more technically oriented films. The post-World War II period sees not only an augmentation of classroom and community use of film, but also what I would call the normalization of ideas about instructional film on a mass basis. Now, this follows the rather large research projects of the 1930s studying effective use. And again, we saw some images of the, just a few minutes ago, of all the various reports being tossed one upon the other. It also follows the World War II mobilization programs, that is, programs that sought to mobilize people as well as media resources in support of the war effort. Now, after the war, many Canadian and American educationalists were interested in continuing those World War II efforts, but in a civilian capacity. This after wartime federal support was receding. Now, one outgrowth of this interest was something that's called the Film Council Movement. Now, this movement built upon existing community councils, the 4-H clubs, again, which we've heard some about in the last films, YMCAs, Rotary Clubs, women's clubs, religious groups, labor clubs. Now, the special role of voluntary societies in American life, American civil society, has been regularly noted by commentators and historians, beginning with no less a figure than de Tocqueville. These groups have had and arguably have a structuring influence on the public sphere. They delineated constituent-defined access to information and deliberative agencies. They draw formal institutional paths between local and national contexts. The Film Council movement, then, has a double role with respect to these societies. First, it provided a technologically defined service to these groups, and second, it was itself a constituency of progressive, technologically invested scholars and educators. Educators and activists. Yes, there were some scholars, too. Both the Canadian and U.S. councils responded to perceived community problems in assessing, evaluating, and deploying informational film. Now, in the United States, the Film Council of America, FCA, was founded in 1946 to coordinate and support the activities of community-based councils, its own local chapters, and national AV organizations. The FCA was an active producer of film catalogs, film discussion guides, material on how to run a council, how to run festivals. They ran its own festival, the Golden Reel Awards they gave for 4 years, and informational film news. It had a newspaper as well as a magazine, the Film Counselor it was called. They claimed to have access to 13,000 chapters, and by 1951 they had 150 local chapters of the FCA proper. More than 30 national organizations had affiliated with the FCA, and this included the American Automobile Association, the American Jewish Congress, American Nurses Association, and the Canadian Film Institute. Now, this last group provided easier flow between the two countries for film programs and publications on informational film utilization. The CFI had then recently changed its name. It was the National Film Society of Canada, the NFS. I'm going to call it the NFS from now on, which was an organization that was modeled on the BFI, and the NFS was formed in 1935. Now, like the FCA, the Film Council of America, the NFS worked with other other educational organizations, pooling resources, and producing written manuals. Canadian Film Councils themselves numbered 300 in 1951 and reached a peak of 550 in 1955. Now, I describe this as a way to give you a sense of the magnitude of the film councils, a sense of their presence, which I see as a seriously underappreciated distribution and exhibition apparatus. It is also evident that this movement was not just about access to films, but it was also about the production, circulation, coordination, and standardization of material about film and about film usage. Now, in particular, Canadian educationalists built upon what was called the Farm and Citizen Radio Forums, which had been going on for about a decade through the 1930s, certainly, doing so, promoting programs of joint group listening to radio talks, watching films on topics, and then guided discussion. Now, this is captured in a discussion trailer, which is, there are no credits on this, so it's simply called Film and Radio Discussion Guide. And I'm going to just show a little bit of this, in which you can see three educational activists talking about this. It's a very short clip, and you just get an idea from it. This is from 1943.
Nurses in many parts of the Dominion is pretty serious.
Hasn't there been some discussion on the radio recently about Canadian medicine?
Yes, there has. In fact, I think these movies should be linked up more closely with what's being talked about on CBC broadcasts.
That seems to be the tendency now.
What do you mean?
Well, this film tonight fits in with the CBC's program called Of Things to Come. But you tell them about that, Neil.
Why, it's a national citizens' forum about Canada in the post-war world. All over the country, small groups of citizens are meeting in homes and clubs to listen to the programs and talk over the problems themselves.
It's the next clip. We'll get to that. All right, so you have three educational activists. There's a representative from the National Film Board, a representative from the CBC, and then somebody from a national health organization. And they're sitting around a radio, and in fact, you can see prominently displayed there the 16-millimeter projector. They've just listened to a talk on Reconstruction that was broadcast on CBC, a series called All Things Considered, and they've also just watched Paul Rota's World of Plenty, which then would have been a new film. Only obliquely, interestingly, I find watching this, only obliquely does the trailer actually offer questions to be taken up by the audience. Instead, I would say that the trailer is, in fact, a presentation of an idea about media consumption and group discussion. In other words, it's showing you the demeanor of authorities engaged and interested in a form of cross-media activity, cross-media consumption. Now, a few years later, with the Film Council movement in full swing, the National Film Board of Canada produced a film called Film and You. This is 1948, Jean Palazzi and Don Peters directing. The film's producer, Donald Fraser, had been the executive secretary of the National Film Society and had worked in the World War II film circuits. Early in production, he was convinced that Film and You was a prestige film and a document of the growing informational film usage. Margaret Carter, who was the head of the U.S. office of the National Film Board, circulated the script as it was in production to various U.S. extensions departments, the Film Council of America, and a variety of educational film companies. The most common response that she received back from these American commentators was to minimize the Canadian information, which we hear all the time, so that's okay, and also to include more dramatic subject matter to suggest the urgency of the situation. So, in fact, it was recommended that the film should include images of famine and atomic blasts. The NFB, Jean Palazzi and Don Peters, to their credit, didn't do that. Nonetheless, the FCA produced its own, they did abundant publicity for the film and showed the film for many years, in fact, but also produced their own discussion guide to accompany Film and You. and produce their own introductory trailer, which provides specific U.S. information. It's a trail that I have not seen, so I'll sort of put up the word if anybody has any idea of the whereabouts of this 1948 American trailer to film in you. That would be fabulous to hear from you. So the film begins with a screening in a community hall. It shows excerpts from actual NFB films, including Kitchens Come True, Get Rid of Rats, sort of keeping with the animal cruelty theme here, and my favorite, Canada Dances. As the lights go up, people in the audience begin to wonder how such programs will always be made available to them. The narrator, to whom the characters respond directly, introduces the idea of a film council. And here we're going to see a little bit of the moment where the film is giving us examples of a variety of local voluntary societies, local clubs, who then send members to form a pan-regional council. And there's some very nice animated work here that you get to enjoy. Again, a short clip.
And us.
And you, of course. Now, what usually happens is that your group, along with each of the others, sends a delegate and they form a film council. Many of these councils represent not only their immediate community, but a whole area. And here we are, just in time for the last of the introduction.
Worker Traffic Recreation Association.
Catherine Cranston, Public Library.
Tour
today, YWCA.
Thomas Hautrecht, representing Home and School Association.
Thanks. So the image here then is one of geographically unified activity, right, from those disparate groups to a representative central body. The film goes on to depict the council's basic functions, shows you how to do fundraising, projector care, preview committees, very important, how you watch films first and then evaluate their potential use, film libraries and cataloging. We'll just have a quick clip here of the cataloging sequence.
Yes, your library can have prints on loan not only from the film board, but also from provincial governments, from the National Film Society, and from private companies. You should see that your library has a catalog of the films available on each of the various specialized subjects. You're going to need a pair.
That's good. Great. And so I include this so that one can get a sense of the ways in which this is partly a publishing enterprise as much as anything else. In other words, the amount of materials, written materials, trying to organize and coordinate how people encounter informational film in community and classroom context was quite abundant at this moment, quite energetic. Now, the final third of the film dramatizes several film screenings. And what's important about this is that these screenings are all about igniting community debate, community discussion about with respect to interests, that local interests. So that through these films and then and debate and discussion that follows, some sort of solution is arrived at, accommodating all the various interests in that location. The clip I'm going to show is the portion where a rural community has seen the film Just Weeds, a 1945 film, and then decides to pool its resources and invest in a chemical sprayer.
Nobody's problem. Collective effort is required to bring these weeds under control. After the show, they discuss what they've seen. Some are uncertain. Others have made up their minds.
I agree with Bert that we get the backing of all the people, that we purchase a power sprayer, and that we go after this problem.
I second that motion.
All those in favor?
The motion was carried.
Okay, so they go into detail about how what happens in the community as a result of this. Now, emphasized here is the degree of coordinated civic activity, civic duty. Modernization as assisted by film and debate, and of course film itself as a sign of that modernization. Now, spurred on by the success of Film and You, and it was reviewed favorably in quite a few national and international publications, distributed fairly widely, the NFB decided to produce a follow-up film called The Gentle Art of Film Projection. Now, it had some of the same crew that had worked on Film and You. This film was designed to improve... designed to improve showmanship in non-theatrical... non-theatrical settings. And it was mostly designed to contain material on how to set up and run and care for projectors. And let's just look at the beginning of The Gentle Art of Film Projection.
Hello, Mr. Armstrong. How's everything over at Boxcar Junction? And how's your film council? We've got the film council here now. Just started it.
Oh, indeed. Tell me, have you got a good projectionist for tonight?
You know, we find the training of projectionists is one of our film council's most important jobs.
Oh, we don't worry about that. They're sending somebody over with the projector. Somebody who knows how to, Oh, dear. They've sent George Beasley.
This is Don Peters, 1950. And you'll note as well that the correct pronunciation is Film Council. Now, the result in this film is a slapstick performance by this clumsy Walter Mitty character who dreams himself as a dandy schoolboy at one point in ruffles and tights and oiled hair as an orchestra conductor and who spends quite a bit of time mooning over Alice, the lovely film librarian. He sets the volume too high, too low. He runs the projection, he runs the film upside down. He ends, at the end of the film, he crashes down a flight of stairs overloaded by film reels and a projector. The narrator slash film expert turns to the camera and pointedly says, George Beasley will never be a showman, but you could. The response to The Gentle Art of Film Projection was not as favorable as it had been for Film and You. And some powerful figures, in fact, wanted the film scrapped and not distributed at all. They complained of its, quote, burlesque treatment of the topic. A full survey showed that Film Council members were pleased with it, but especially projectionists and people in rural audiences, people in rural locations. It was seen unfavorably primarily by urban audiences and felt that it was, quote, directed to people with a low IQ, and, quote, it is unbelievable that taxpayers' money is spent on such rubbish. Now, one of the other perceived problems of this film, though, aside from this burlesque tone that people complained about, was that it didn't deal with discussion. So another film was proposed that would focus quite a bit more on this, again, building on that Citizens Forum, Radio Forum model, one that promoted group discussion techniques for film. Distribution officers, field officers, council members all called not only for a film on film utilization and discussion, but in fact an entire series on group dynamics. The result, the immediate result, was a film called Let's Talk About Films, which is a 1954 film by Julian Briggs. This film illustrated techniques to generate debate following film screenings, showing the importance of a skilled discussion leader. It was to be used alongside a film on discussion techniques and a booklet on... booklet talking about film and also was to make a full workshop on film utilization. Again, using the diegetic film instruction context, Let's Talk About Film argues that film discussion leaders are not to be blustery authorities, but are to become members of the group, watching films with audiences and posing questions. Now, the last film I want to show a clip from is a 1957 Stanley Jackson film called Looking Forward, The Story of a Film Council. And this is really a film that's an ode to the success of the councils. The film presents the contributions to the welfare and enlightenment of citizens made by councils. So whereas 9 years earlier, Film and You chronicled the process by which communities could form film councils, Looking Forward begins with a montage of councils already in operation. As presented here, groups are typified by gender, interest, ethnicity, and language. And you'll see that there's a rather obvious imperative of Canadian citizenship enforced. So I'll have the clip for that.
Well, I think we should give aid to these underdeveloped countries.
But, Jim, as soon as you start giving aid to these countries, they become industrialized and they start competing with us.
Wait a minute, Ken. There's two sides to this question.
The whole thing will cost too much money.
You keep talking, Jerry, as if it's only a matter of money. But it's also a moral issue. The point is, how much good will it do?
So I feel it would be better for the children.
I don't agree. The experts tell us to pamper
the
kids.
Oh, no, Janie. You're missing the point of the film.
The film makes me think the schools here are more progressive in some ways than they were at home. But it seems to me they don't pay enough attention to the classical subjects. Excuse me, Miss Goba. We agree to talk English.
Le film que vous allez voir ce soir, c'est L'homme aux oiseaux.
Est-ce que tu es prêt, Louis?
Tout est prêt, Hans.
A group of university students in Montreal, a new Canadians club. Any night in Canada, you find people gathered together, arguing, discussing, learning with the aid of film. It may be a film of special interest to a labor union, a businessman's luncheon, or a church group. It may concern agriculture, child psychology, or the meaning of the Commonwealth. This use of film, to instruct as well as to amuse, is mainly due to the work of the film councils.
Okay. So while there's sort of an equivalence set up in this portrait of difference, community of communities, there's also an assimilationist pressure that you can see. New Canadians who agree to talk English, followed by a group who, of course, agree to speak French. Note that here there's no highlighting of film per se, though there's a title is one title is evident, and the topics you can figure out what they're talking about. What we do see is the 16-millimeter projector standing watch over several scenes, and the overarching element is the adaptability of spaces for film and discussion. I'm just going to jump ahead here rather than talk more about the film, just to wrap up with a few concluding comments about this movement and interest in discussion. In this brief description of activity, I hope it's evident that the progress toward a stable educational media scene equally ensconced ideas about film, education, and citizenship. For instance, film discussion was far from taken for granted as a standard instructional strategy. It had to be developed. These films demonstrate the investment in ways to disseminate, talk about film as much as film itself. And along with these ideas ran particular modes of serious consideration and uses of community space. Put differently, cultural leadership deployed the mobile medium of film to access and influence locations for the molding of consciousness and civic participation. And in addition, we can't ignore this, in addition to the discourse on democratic life and voluntarism that we see here, the movement worked to configure a new relationship between government and industry in the arena of education and media, right? This is partly the tale of the expansion of a non-theatrical market, right, as businesses readied themselves for the prying open of classrooms and other quasi-educational sites. Now, the film councils worked to coordinate how decisions, yes, thank you, how decisions are made about film use, offering a framework for a public mediated by screens, mediated by community leaders and cultural authorities. The forum discussion idea then blended new, less traditionally authoritative educational tactics with ideas about participation in democratic life. So what we see here is an effort to situate a technological apparatus in a vaguely Deweyan, and that's John Dewey, educational idea, and in so doing, finding comfortable ground for screen education and this film-inflected public. I'll stop right there. Thank you.